Merħba għal program Minajnejn Barranin fejn jiena Colin Fitz niltaqa' u niddiskuti pajjiżna ma' diversi persuni ta' nazzjonalitajiet differenti li għal xi raġuni u oħra għamlu lil Malta id-dar tagħhom. Bjort li ta' Punt-Seba Campus Minajnejn Barranin illum għandi miegħi persuna li għanda taħlit interessanti ħafna f'ħajjita mill-mama tagħha mill-Italja, mis-sira mill-Belġju, miż-żewġa Malti, taħdem fil-qasam ta' traduzzjoni u insomma, biex tgħidilna dwar ħajjita qiegħda hawnhekk illum Amy Coleman. Merħba Amy.
Merħba, grazzi tal-istedina. Ħanitkellem bl-Ingliż.
Kemm taf Malti imma? How much?
Nifhem kważi kollox imma nibżgħu nitkellem għax m'għandix il-vokabolarju. Allura tista' titkellem bil-Malti, imma ħanirrispondik bl-Ingliż.
Ħanaqleb bl-Ingliż jien ukoll u nagħmlu aktar fluwenti anke forsi minn jiġi minnek fil-pajjiż li semmejna jkun jista' jisma' dal-programm ukoll jifhem kollox. So I'm going to switch to English now. My name is Colin Fitz, I'm the host of Minajnejn Barranin, Malta through Global Eyes. And Amy Coleman is my guest today. And Amy, a very interesting background. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay, where do I start? So I am half Belgian, half Italian. So my mom is Italian from Padova, but her mom was from Puglia, from the south of Italy. So I have some southern blood. Mm-hmm. My dad is Belgian, but my parents met in London. So my dad was an English lecturer. He was doing research work and he met my mom in the library. She was doing research for her thesis. Big love story.
You're not meant to speak in the library, though. You're meant to keep
yes,
it very quiet.
Well, I'm not sure how that went. But something magical happened there. And so my parents got married and the only common language they had at the time was English. So I grew up speaking English and Italian at home and Dutch at school because I'm from Flanders, so from the north of Belgium.
Yes, the two languages spoken in Belgium.
There are actually three. So if you'll allow me, I'd like to focus a bit on the complexity of Belgium. And I'm going to be honest, I had to bring some notes because it's complex even for a Belgian.
Well, let's continue introducing you a bit more before we focus on that. But we're going to be talking in detail about Belgium. And it's a country that I haven't explored in both these series that I've done. The first series, and this is the second series, and we haven't explored Belgium yet. So this is a great opportunity. But you are married to a Maltese.
I am, yes.
Yes, what's his name?
His name is André.
Hello, André. And you work here at the University of Malta, where we are broadcasting from. And what's your position?
So I've been here since 2022. I'm the coordinator of the interpreting program. I also teach in the translation program, and I teach several courses in Degree Plus. And one of those courses is Dutch for beginners. So if anyone's interested, registrations are open.
Absolutely. Degree Plus is an evening course, isn't it? It's a...
No, it's actually a lunchtime course. Wednesdays and Fridays from noon till 2 o'clock. It's open to bachelor and master students. And it's fun because there are no exams, there's no stress. It's just 2 hours of fun lectures to explore languages, arts, crafts, and so on.
Excellent. And people, listeners, can find out more about it by typing in Degree Plus University of Malta onto their computer. So, and you do translations at the EU as well?
I used to. I worked as a freelance translator, proofreader, copywriter, editor, occasionally interpreter for a good 15, 16 years. Probably 18, actually. I stopped this year. Yes, I used to work for the EU as well, but now I train interpreters for the EU. So, as you know, we desperately need Maltese interpreters. And obviously, I don't teach the Maltese. I teach the courses into English and Italian. But yes, so I train interpreters to go and work in Brussels, a city that I absolutely love.
And you studying, you're doing a PhD as well, I believe?
I just finished it, actually.
Just finished it. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So I have to call you doctor now.
You can just call me Amy, but yes.
Amy, yes. Call me. Yeah, tell us about that.
I did a PhD in translation studies in Belgium, obviously. My PhD focuses on translation evaluation and directionality. So I studied whether students make more errors when they translate from their first language into their second language, their foreign language, sorry, or vice versa. And I just finished it. I just received my certificate the other day. So
congratulations. Yes. Very happy for you.
Thank you.
We are recording this program and it will be broadcast in the summer of 2024, although it will be placed on our website, the Campus 103.7 website, and can be heard forevermore in the future. But at the moment, perhaps students, young people are trying to decide what course to follow here at the University of Malta. Would you encourage people to study translating and the art of translating? And I'm sure there are plenty of jobs in this field in the future. They can make a good career out of it.
Definitely, definitely. So as I said, I teach both in the translation and the interpreting program. My main focus is interpreting. We desperately need more interpreters. I know there's this fear that AI will take over. AI will not take over for the time being. We will use AI to our advantage. So don't let that scare you. I think if you love
languages... We're very far from a Star Trek universal translator where we can understand Klingons and aliens.
I don't know how far we are, but it's not going to happen overnight. Mm-hmm. So if you're a born communicator and you love languages, then it's definitely a very exciting career, especially interpreting, because you get to travel a lot. If you work for the EU, you can live here and work in Brussels, in Strasbourg, in Luxembourg. Yeah. So yes, it's a very exciting career.
Translating and interpreting are two different branches of study.
Yes, they are. They are. So translation is the, very simply put, the written part, and interpreting is the spoken part. Mm. So they're two different skill sets. They're related, but they're two different skill sets.
Yeah, yes. You need to be very quick.
You need to be very quick. You need to be
For interpreting, I mean.
Yes, I'm very confident. You can't be excessively shy because, I mean, you have to sometimes wing it. We're not dictionaries. We don't know all the world the words out there. So yes, if you want to be an interpreter, you need a good dose of confidence, definitely.
Have you ever been in a position to interpret for somebody well-known, famous politician, leader, I don't know, somebody in a big, powerful position? And, you know, that's the responsibility grows the higher the level of discussion is being held.
No, myself, no, because I focused more on translation before joining university, simply because my language combination didn't really allow me to work here. I mean, the languages I have, Dutch, English, Italian, the languages that are not really useful here, as in there wasn't really much work in interpreting. So personally, no, I have translated a lot. I have translated a lot of texts that have been used at a high level, but interpreting, unfortunately, not. Maybe in the future. But I hope that my students get to do this. So I'm training the next generation to do this.
Now, your relationship with Malta, how did that start? Actually, the first question I ask all my listeners, my interviewees, is always when you were young, growing up in Belgium, did you know of Malta? Did you know Malta existed? Did it ever feature in your conversation at school, whatever?
I'm going to sound really stupid now, but I had no idea Malta existed. I'm here for love. So I met my husband in 2004. Malta had just joined the EU. He was part of the first cohort to go on the Erasmus program.
Oh.
And we met at the University of Bologna, the Forlì campus, actually.
As students.
Uh-huh. And the first thing I told him, and I'm really ashamed to say this, is, oh, Malta, that's an island near Portugal, isn't it? So then I quickly ran to a bookshop and bought a book about the enlargement of the European Union because I felt so stupid.
You mistook it for Madeira.
Yes, probably. And in my defense, everyone did. No one knew where it was. And a year and a half later, I was living here. So
a year and a half, a year and a half later, yes. You fell in head over heels.
Yes, and I'm very impulsive. I just packed my bag and I said, let me just go to the Mediterranean. I have a very Mediterranean character. So when I first visited, I really felt like it was the place for me. So.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
It's a good moment to ask you, like when you first arrived and you're coming off the plane, your very first impression. Did you come here to sort of try and find out more about Malta and come for holiday first? Or was your first arrival the arrival of you coming to live here?
No. I did visit several times before. My first impression was, where's the sea? Because when you think of Malta, you think of the sea, and you arrive at the airport and all you see is factories. So I thought, where am I? I loved it. It's very similar to the south of Italy, where we used to have a house, to Gargano.
Yes, and Puglia.
Yes. Puglia. So Gargano is an area in Puglia where we used to have a house. My grandma was from there. So it's very similar. So I felt right at home. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So especially the small villages where you know, people have a chair outside their house and they have a chat and everyone knows everyone. And so, I loved it. I love the blue sea. I still do. I look at the sea and I think this is, we have the sea in Belgium, but it looks very different. So even just the color of the sky, I loved it. Very densely populated, though. Yes. Very, very densely populated.
In fact, referring back to Puglia, Puglia is like how Malta was 30, 40 years ago. Yeah. And for want of a better word, and I mean, you know, progress, economy, etc., which have brought some good things, but it is rather, Puglia is more unspoilt. Obviously, because they have a bigger area. But Malta has, some of it has been overbuilt, and there is a huge amount, a very big population for such a small island, which is a bit of a shame. But there are still pockets of prettiness.
There are. I live in probably the most densely populated area. I live in Sliema. I love it because it's very cosmopolitan. But I do miss parks. I mean, I grew up in Ghent, which is a very, very green city. Mm-hmm. It's one of the greenest cities in Flanders. It was voted one of the most livable cities in Flanders and even in the world, actually. So, yes, I miss being surrounded by parks and by nature.
But mostly... So how long have you been in Malta?
Since 2006.
That's quite a long time. Is that long enough for you to achieve a Maltese passport? And
I've never applied for one.
Never needed one.
I have Belgian and Italian citizenship. My husband's been pushing me for years to apply. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of paperwork. I will at some point. Mm-hmm. But yes, for the time being, no. It's just too much paperwork. I can't be bothered.
Do you think you'll ever sort of consider yourself at least partly Maltese?
Oh, I am. I've been adopted here by the country. No, I love it here. I am. I always say, "Ina nofs Belgiana, nofs Italiana, nofs tit Maltija."
How sweet. Yes. Lovely. And learning the Maltese language, you've picked it up. You can understand it.
Yes, I took several courses. As I said, I teach from Maltese into English and into Italian if we ever have students who have...
Even though you're not as fluent... When you speak it, you can speak it, as you've proved.
I can speak it, but I'm a perfectionist. I'm a linguist, so I know I'm going to make mistakes.
Okay. But you teach translating.
No, interpreting into English.
Into English from Maltese.
From Maltese. So I understand. My passive knowledge of Maltese is very, very good. I mean, in interpreting, it's what we call a C language. It's a language you understand perfectly, but perhaps you don't speak perfectly.
Okay.
Because you always interpret into your native language. So I will never be able to interpret into Maltese, obviously, but as long as you understand the language, you can work from that language into your native
language.
That's
fascinating.
Yes.
You don't seem to have any sort of clash of cultures within yourself, or do you?
I do. Depending on the language I'm speaking, I'm a very different person. So when I'm angry, I will shout in Italian. In English, I'm more composed, probably. In Dutch, everyone tells me I sound really, really harsh. Maybe because it's a harsh language, I don't know. I speak French quite well as well, and I can explain later why that is, because in Flanders, very briefly, in Flanders we start studying French at the age of 8, so I studied French from the age of 8 till the age of 22, so my French is quite good as well. Depending on the language I'm speaking, I do sound like a different person, but I don't think I have multiple personalities. I don't know. I'm a very feisty person, and I can be, I can be difficult to deal with.
But also the cultures of these different countries, they all inhabit your body peacefully.
I think it's hard.
Harmony.
Well, when you have... multiple citizenships, and when you've lived your life kind of in between countries, because I grew up in Belgium, I spent most of my holidays in Italy, now I live here, it's difficult to pick your dominant culture. I find that very hard. When people ask me, what's your dominant language, that's also very difficult for me to answer. I don't know. At the moment, it's probably English. But growing up, it was, when I was very young, it was Italian. When I was at school, it was Dutch. And when it comes to culture, I always struggle. I I'm Belgian, but I'm also very Italian. I'm very, character-wise, I'm very, very Italian. So, and I'm probably a bit Maltese as well. I'm probably a bit Maltese
as well.
Yes,
you picked it up along the years. Yes. Your husband, Andre, has he traveled a lot as well? Is he fully Maltese?
Yes, yes, yes. He's fully Maltese. He's traveled a lot. He doesn't like Belgium. He doesn't like traveling to Belgium.
Okay.
Unfortunately, he loves Italy, but he doesn't really like Belgium. No, he struggles with the gloomy weather.
I see.
He loves the art, the culture, and so on. But the weather is something that really gets him down. The fact that it's always dark there, that you wake up in the morning and at 9 o'clock it's still dark, and then you go to work and then you come back and it's still dark and you never see sunlight. It really affects him. So yes, he prefers it when we go to Italy.
Okay, but forgive me for asking. Perhaps it's a bit sensitive, but you who are, you know, you have all these different cultures as part of your life. You've lived in different countries, and he has always, by and large, always lived in Malta, apart from a bit of travel. Have there been difficulties over the years for you to get used to each other?
No, I think, as I said, I'm quite Mediterranean. So when I moved here, I adapted really quickly. And it was my decision to move here. I never told him, let's live in Belgium. Although when he met me, he was studying European studies. And he said, oh, great, so I've met someone from Belgium. She studies in Brussels. There's my ticket to go to Belgium. But then I came to Malta and I said, there's no way. I'm coming here. And I remember when I graduated, one of my professors told me, what on earth are you going to do on that rock? And I said, I'm going to follow my heart. And I haven't looked back.
And you still believe that, despite the fact that in the last 20 years, Malta has changed a lot?
I have to say, yes, it has changed a lot. And I always say, I don't think I will retire here. I think I will go to Italy.
I see.
It has changed a lot. Construction really gets to me. Mm-hmm. I know this is—it's a cliche.
No, everybody's mentioned this in every single program. It's a reality.
It is, and I mean, we live in Slima. As I said, when we bought our apartment, we had a beautiful sea view. He used to work in Valletta, and he used to wave at me from the ferry. And now all we see is other people's bedrooms. Also just the lack of enforcement in Malta. Malta could work so well, but the lack of enforcement sometimes makes it really hard. For example, cleanliness in the streets. Just to mention one thing. These are things that really get to me because Belgium is very, very organized and very clean and very structured. And so that is something I really struggle with.
Mm-hmm. However, there is an Italian part of you and there is some similarities regarding that in Italy, right?
Exactly.
To be fair.
So I adapt.
But I'm on your side, as in, like, I totally agree. The word is enforcement. Mm-hmm. And if only that enforcement was actually applied, my God, this place could almost be a paradise.
That's true.
Let's hear the first track, the first song that you've chosen for us from my instructions. When I asked you to be interviewed, I suggested that you come up with a couple of songs to introduce us to your life or to where you're from. And you chose songs related to Belgium.
I did. I chose one in Dutch and I chose one in French.
So let's hear the first one, which is called...
Lieve Kleine Piranha by Gorky. So Lieve Kleine Piranha means sweet little piranha fish. And yes.
I thought I recognized that word.
So it's a song by Luc De Vos, who is an icon of my city. He's a singer, but he's often described as a poet, as a man who puts poetry to music.
Your city is Ghent.
My city is Ghent.
And that's separate. That's not Genk.
No, that's not
another city,
that's
right?
Another city, yes. Okay. Ghent is halfway between Bruges and Brussels. Mm-hmm. So,
it's a very historic city, isn't it?
It is. Ghent? It's a medieval city. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful city. It's a city of art and culture, and I absolutely love it. It was a very wealthy city, a city of trade. And you can still see that when you visit it, actually, yes.
I wouldn't be surprised if the hanging tapestries at St. John's Cathedral...
They are Flemish, yes.
They're Flemish.
They're Flemish.
Possibly from Ghent?
Possibly, I'm not sure, but they are definitely Flemish, yes. So, yes.
So the song represents...
So it's a song that represents me, my character. So I'm very sweet but feisty. And I love it because it's this song by this famous artist of my city, and it really reminds me of growing up there. So, and he passed away a few years ago, and now he has, I'm not sure whether it's a street or a square named after him. So yes, he's kind of the symbol of the city of Ghent.
So the artist is called Gorky.
That's his band. His name is Luc De Vos. Yes.
Tune, and the language we heard there was
that is Dutch. So
Dutch.
It's often referred to as Belgian Dutch or Flemish, but in reality, there's only one type of Dutch. This is a very sensitive issue. I'm not going to go into it in excessive detail, but yes, this is one of the three languages of Belgium. So
So I think it's time we waded in to the history of Belgium.
I'm going to go into the complexity, because when people ask me what is Belgium like, I like to say it's a complex country. It's a complex country because it's a federal state, so we don't have one central government and one parliament, but we have multiple parliaments. We actually have six governments and six parliaments. And many Belgians don't know this. And as I told you earlier, I actually had to bring some notes myself to make sure I structure my thoughts. So Belgium has three regions and it has three communities. And the regions are based on territory. So there is the Flemish region in the north. Mm-hmm. There is the Walloon region in the south. And then Brussels capital region. Brussels is obviously the capital city.
Well, it is a little bit like Switzerland then, right?
But there's a difference. Okay. There's a difference because we also have three communities and the communities are based on language. So we have the Flemish community, which is the Dutch speaking community in the north. We have the French speaking community in the south. And then we have a very small part in the east of the country, which is the German speaking community near Germany. The difference between Belgium as a federal state and countries like Germany, which has its Länder, or Canada, which has its provinces, or Switzerland, which has the cantons, is that in Belgium, we have these three regions and these three communities, which actually overlap. So that makes it very complex. So as I said, we have six parliaments and six governments. You would think we have seven because three regions, three communities and one federal. But we only have six because the Flemish community and the Flemish region decided to join forces into one Flemish parliament. It's very, very complex.
It sounds like it.
It's very complex. And there's a lot of tension in Belgium between the language communities. So language, as a linguist, obviously, I'm very interested in that. Because as I said, the communities are based on language and each community decides on its own policies when it comes to education, culture, media. And in Flanders, we learn French from the age of 8, whereas in Wallonia, Dutch is not a compulsory subject at school.
Oh.
And then we have Brussels, which is very unique because Brussels is both French and Dutch speaking. So officially there are two languages in Brussels, but the majority of people speak French. Mm. So even there, there's a lot of tension. I mean, I studied there for 4 years. I used to order my sandwich in the same place every single day. And I used to order it in Dutch and they used to answer in French. And I found it so frustrating because I knew they understood, but they would answer in French. And these are little things. Obviously, it goes beyond this. But people living and working in Brussels know that this is a daily struggle, this language issue. And there's this fear, let's say, that Belgium might at some point split up. I hope it never happens. But if it does, it's going to be because of the language issue.
It is a rumor that comes up periodically, doesn't it?
It does.
There was a time about 10 years ago when Belgium couldn't decide what government to have.
So I think it was the year when it took over 500 days to form a federal government.
Yes.
That's because of the complexity of it, because we have all these different governments, these different parliaments. So it's very difficult to compromise sometimes.
And yet you never hear of violence between these communities, or do you?
Not violence, but tension. I would just call it tension. It's something that comes up a lot, even in the media. The beginning of every academic year, there's this talk of why are they not studying Dutch in Wallonia when we are studying French in Flanders? And so, yes, this comes up a lot.
But meanwhile, English is studied by everyone at school?
In Flanders, yes. So again, different language policies. I don't think it's compulsory in Wallonia. In Flanders, it is compulsory, if I'm not mistaken, from the age of 12. So we speak a lot of languages. We're multilingual. And that's the same situation here, really. Even here in Malta, you speak so many languages, especially my generation. I just turned 40. Most people speak Italian as well.
Italian, yes.
Very, very fluently. In fact, when I met my husband, I thought he was Italian. He fooled an Italian into thinking he was Italian because his Italian was so, so good. Now, the younger generation
not so much
leans more towards English.
Yeah, you know the reason. Belgium sounds like hard work.
It is hard work, but it's a fascinating country. And I remember my husband telling me when we met, he said, at school we were told that Belgium was the prime example of a federal state that works, and it doesn't work.
It doesn't.
I mean, it works, but again, there's a lot of tension. It's not that easy. I mean, Belgium became a federal state in 1970 through six reforms. So in the past 50 years, we've had six constitutional reforms, which is a lot. So yes, it's a federal state that perhaps to the outside world works, but when you live there, it can get quite complex, yes.
In history, though, Belgium has been fought over, a bit like Malta, but mostly used as a sort of corridor for Germany to get to France or France to get to Germany, when over the centuries those two nations were fighting each other. Does that still have relevance today?
Well, I can tell you a personal story. My dad is very, very interested in the First and the Second World War, and I spent my childhood going to war cemeteries and Second World War museums. We have a lot of beautiful sites in Belgium. We have the in Flanders Fields Museum, for example.
So,
I spent my childhood going to these sites and learning about the history of Belgium. I mean, Belgium was very important because of its strategic location. Mm. And that's probably one of the things that I miss about it the most, its strategic location, the fact that it really is in the heart of Europe.
So you can just on the weekend decide to go to Holland, Germany, Switzerland, France.
Yes, definitely.
Or even just pop over to the UK because there's ferries even from Belgium, aren't there, from Ostend?
And what used to be called the Eurostar, now I think it's called the Thalys. Trains. I mean, we used to travel a lot, and that is something that I really miss. Not that you can't travel in Malta. I mean, you can hop on a plane, but the central location makes it so easy. In fact, my husband always jokes, the thing you miss about Belgium is the fact that you could escape to other countries. And in a way, he's right.
Yeah.
We used to spend our weekends going to Paris, going to London, going to Amsterdam. So the central location, yes, is something that I really miss, and that was very important even historically. So, but even Malta has a very central, important historical location. So we share that in our history.
And also having EU Parliament, very important institutions.
I think there is a sense of pride. Mm-hmm. That's also the reason why I decided to study in Brussels. I had to choose between Brussels and Antwerp at the time. And I love Antwerp, but Brussels is Brussels. Brussels is the heart of Europe, the heart of the European institutions. And it's changed a lot over the past 20 years. It used to be a city where people would work and study and then just go home. But now it's become very vibrant, especially the European Quarter. Mm-hmm. And it's lovely to go there. And I go there with my students, actually, on study visits every year. And I love sharing my love for Brussels with them. And the European Quarter has become a very, very lively area in Brussels. And yes, there is a sense of pride that the institutions are there, of course.
You mentioned the sea is different. Of course, it's the North Sea,
isn't it? It's the North Sea, yes.
So it's grayish more than bluish.
Grayish, purplish.
But there are beaches, including sandy beaches.
There are, yes.
The sea would be cold, though, right? Even in summer, probably.
Well, I spent my summers in Italy, so I did go to the seaside every now and then. But yes, I spent my summers in Italy. Yes, the sea is colder. It's what I love are the dunes. That's something we don't have, the dunes, the sandy dunes.
We don't have that in Malta.
So that is something that when I first took my kids, they absolutely loved, because the beaches are very, very big and you have these dunes and you have a lot of nature. You have nature reserves at the seaside. So, yes.
Is Belgium very flat like Holland?
It is. It is referred to in French as le plat pays, the flat country. Yes. Okay. Well, Flanders, I have to say Flanders, because the south of Belgium, so Wallonia, does have hills, but I think the highest point is about 600, if I'm not mistaken, 652 meters, so not excessively high. But Flanders is very, very flat.
So, so that's another thing with Malta. Okay, we have hills and things, but we don't have mountains here. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing we have in common. But one thing that is different are the forests.
Yes, definitely.
Could you get lost in a Belgian forest? Are they that big?
You could. The forests are mainly in the south of the country, so not where I am from the north. You could get lost, but it's all signposted, so probably you wouldn't.
But they are big. You can go for a day trip, you know, walking in the forest.
Definitely. And even driving in Belgium is beautiful because the landscape is so different from Malta. And driving is something I miss as well. I used to love just hopping into the car and going to the south of Belgium and visiting Bastogne, for example. There's a Second World War museum in Bastogne.
There. Yes, very famous battle there. I'm a bit of a history buff.
I took my husband there.
That's the Ardennes battle.
Yes,
right?
The Battle of the Ardennes. I took my husband there recently. It was. It took us 3 hours to get there and it was raining the whole time and he felt miserable, but he loved the museum, so that was great.
It rained, I think, during the battle as well. And it was very cold.
It was snowing.
Snowing, 1944,
actually,
yes. Ghent, where you brought up for the first few years of your life?
No, my whole life, actually.
Your whole life?
I was born and raised in Ghent, but I studied in Brussels.
Studied in Brussels and summers in Italy.
And summers in Italy, yes.
But tell us about Ghent.
So Ghent is a beautiful city. It's a medieval city. We have the Castle of the Counts.
It's narrow streets.
Well, it's if you've ever been to Bruges, it's very similar, but on a larger scale.
Okay.
It's a city where art and culture are very important. We have a very important festival called the Ghent Festivities in July, where the city is transformed in a big open-air festival. There's music, there's art, there's film, everything. And it's a city that was built on the confluence of two rivers, the River Scheldt and the River Lys. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite spots is actually in the city center, along the quays where textiles were brought in. Because as I said, it was a city of trade. It was a very important city for textile trade. And yes, my favorite spot is along the river in the city center, where you can find actually one of my favorite poems, which I actually brought today, and I'd love to read it for you. It's very short. Don't worry. So the verses of this poem are actually featured along the banks of one of the rivers in Belgium. And the title of the poem is Mélopée, which comes from French, and it means monotonous chant. And the poem actually describes a canoe going to sea very slowly under the moonlight. And it's lovely to see these verses on the banks of the river and to see the canoes actually going, well, not to sea, but just the canoes on the water. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so the poem is called Melope by Paul van Ostaijen, who was a famous Flemish poet. It was written in the early 1920s. And if you'll allow me, I'll read it for
Absolutely.
You. Okay, so, onder de maan schuift de lange rivier. Over de lange rivier schuift moede de maan. Onder de maan, op de lange rivier, schuift de kano naar zee. Langs het hoogriet, langs de laagwei, schuift de kano naar zee. Schuift met de schuivende maan de kano naar zee. Zo zijn ze gezellen naar zee, de kano, de maan en de man. Waarom schuiven de maan en de man, getweeën, gedwee, naar de zee? So it's a monotonous chant, but it's beautiful because it's
hypnotic.
It is, it is. It really describes the tranquility of life.
Yeah, and the way you read it for us, that was beautiful.
So that was Dutch. As I said, I teach it here at university. So if anyone is interested, semester two, degree plus Dutch for beginners. Although this was Belgian Dutch, Flemish, right? Mm-hmm. As I said, there's only one type of Dutch, but so my pronunciation is Flemish. People who have been to the Netherlands, I'm not sure whether you've been to Amsterdam, I think.
Briefly, yes. One day.
So the Dutch spoken there is a bit harsher, so they have guttural sounds, which we don't have.
So would people realize that you weren't Dutch if you visited and were speaking Flemish?
It takes one word, yes. From the pronunciation, you will know. It's the same language, but just a different pronunciation.
Okay. Well, we had the poem, which was lovely. I just wanted to ask you about your childhood. The type of houses, the type of childhood you had. Did you have a garden? I mean, in Ghent, what kind of house would it have been like? And how did you grow up compared to the houses, the flats, the apartments you live here in Malta and that you see children growing up in here?
This is a very good question. It's something I discuss a lot with my friends here. So I grew up in a townhouse with a garden in the city centre. Opposite, there was a park. So very different from here.
Lovely.
In Italy, we have a beautiful house with a lovely garden that used to be a vineyard. Very, very big. And here I live in an apartment. And in Belgium, at least at the time when I was growing up, people didn't really buy apartments. People bought houses. People actually built houses. My parents didn't. They had a townhouse. They still do. But there's a saying in Dutch, which is een baksteen in de maag hebben, which means to have a brick in your stomach. And that means that the Belgians love building. Obviously, there's more land. I don't want to say it's more affordable because Belgium is not really the most affordable country, but people tend to build their own houses. So when I told my friends and my family, yes, I bought an apartment, they said, why? Why would you do that? Because here in Malta, obviously, living in an apartment is very normal, but I still struggle with it. I don't like it. It's convenient and it is what it is. I mean, property is extremely expensive here.
Yes.
So, but obviously my kids, they're used to it. So for them, it's normal. They know otherwise because obviously we travel a lot, but they're perfectly fine living in an apartment. Whereas for me, I would prefer a house with a garden.
Even here, would you consider moving out of Sliman, buying a house in Malta?
We have considered it, but the prices are ridiculous. Mm. And at the end of the day, the only reason why I would move is to escape construction, but construction is everywhere anyway.
Yeah,
so I'm just going to stick to Slima for the convenience of it and the fact that I'm near the beach.
Yes, and there's the waterfront, the promenade.
Yes,
that's a nice walk there.
It is.
Although sometimes it gets a bit crowded, I guess.
I don't walk that much. I should walk more.
But you swim?
I swim. I'm not a good swimmer. The first time I swam here, my husband took me to Slima. And I didn't realize it was that deep because the North Sea, you just walk in. So I jumped in. And I started screaming. I made a complete fool of myself because I can swim, but I'm not a great swimmer.
Okay.
And then
you thought you'd feel the bottom.
Yes, and I didn't. And it was horrendous. So I still have this fear. I mean, I live in Slima. I do swim there, but I need to go to Surfside where there's a lifeguard. So I know that, you know, there's someone there to save me. I always tell my kids, just don't go in the deep end because I'm not a good swimmer. But yes, so yes, I do swim, but not a lot. Yeah. Not a very sporty person, to be honest.
Let's talk about food, the Belgian food that I asked you to talk about to prepare something for us.
So, as I said, I grew up with an Italian mom, so I do know the Belgian cuisine, but at home we always had pasta.
Okay, we had Italian food. Of course.
There is something that we share, Malta and Belgium, and that is rabbit. One of our national dishes is actually rabbit with plums, konijn met pruimen. I don't eat rabbit. But yes, that's one of our national dishes. Then obviously mussels and chips. It's a stereotype, yes, but that's what it is. Another dish that I really, really love is stoofvlees, which is a beef stew, and it's made with beer and bread coated in mustard. It's really, really good. It takes hours to cook. And then obviously we have chips. So they're not French fries. They are Belgian chips.
They're Belgian chips.
They are Belgian chips.
So French fries is wrong?
It's wrong. They're Belgian.
They originated from Belgium.
I'm not sure, but I mean...
they're Belgian, okay.
They're Belgian, they're Belgian. And then obviously we have the chocolate.
Yes, Belgian chocolate. Tell us about that.
We don't call them chocolates. We call them pralines because they are filled. So Belgian chocolates are not just, it's not just plain chocolate, but they have a filling. And then we have waffles, different types of waffles.
Quite a selection of foods from such a small country.
Very simple foods, but very hearty foods.
And beer. I mean, there are some beers.
I was going to bring you beer. I'm going to be honest. I was going to bring you Leffe, but then I thought I don't want to have that reputation. So I'm just going to bring you some biscuits
instead.
You brought
me biscuits, which is just as nice. Thank you so much.
But yeah, beer is part of our daily daily routine. Mm-hmm. Everyone has beer. Just the way in Italy we have wine on the table, in Belgium you have beer, yes.
Are fish part of the menu in Belgium?
Yes, so shrimps are very popular. In fact, we have a dish which is tomatoes filled with shrimps coated in mayonnaise. I know it sounds horrible, but it's actually a really good dish. So yes, we do have fish as well, and mussels, obviously. If you go to the seaside, you have mussels in Belgium.
Your mother, being Italian, did she adapt well to Belgium?
Yes and no. Both my parents are an only child, so we didn't have aunts and uncles and cousins growing up. So we were very, very sheltered. We grew up very sheltered. And my mom really focused a lot on the Italian cuisine and Italian culture and Italian language. She worked as a freelance translator and interpreter. So she didn't have that much contact with the, I don't want to say with the outside world, but she didn't work in an office, for example. So perhaps she didn't integrate as well as I did here. But yes, I mean, for her, Belgium is home now. I think just like Malta is home to me now, once you, you've lived in a country for a long time, you're comfortable, you know how everything works, you know how to find your way, and it becomes home. So.
Indeed. Let's hear the second song that you've prepared for us. And there's a bit of an explanation that comes with this song as well.
Yes. So the second song I chose is by Angèle. She's a singer from Brussels. And the title is Bruxelles, je t'aime. Brussels, I love you. I chose this song because I have a bit of a love-hate relationship with Brussels. So I hate the weather, but that's not just Brussels, that's Belgium in general. Mm-hmm. And Brussels, when I was studying there, as I said, it wasn't as vibrant as it is today. But I lived the best years of my life in Brussels. I studied there. I owe everything to Brussels. I mean, Brussels is the reason why I went on Erasmus, why I met my husband, why I came here. And landing in Brussels always makes me smile. And the song also explains the tricky language situation in Brussels. There's a verse in the song that says, "What if one day she breaks up and we have to choose sides? It would be the worst nightmare, all for a language issue. I've lived my most beautiful stories in French and Flemish." And that really describes beautifully how painful it would be for Belgium and for Brussels to split up in a French and a Flemish camp, because at the end of the day, we're all people and we live our life speaking the two languages. So this song really represents Brussels as it is on a day-to-day basis, and that's why I chose it. And I also chose it because it's French, so I wanted to really bring you a piece of Belgium. Belgium is not only Flanders, but it's also Wallonia. Brussels is bilingual, so as a linguist, I really wanted to give you a taste of both.
So the artist is...
It's called Angèle. She's from Brussels and she lives in Paris now. So this song is an ode to Brussels. So she explains how the weather may be horrible in Brussels, but she always loves coming home and she loves the city and she would never want it to break up because of this language issue that we have.
And it's called?
And it's called Bruxelles, je t'aime.
On n'a pas les tours de New York, on n'a pas de lumière de jour. Six mois dans l'année, on n'a pas Beaubourg, ni la Seine, on n'est pas la ville de l'amour. Mais bon, vous plage Saint-Gilles, lacun à qui je dois mon nom. Bruxelles, je t'aime, Bruxelles, je t'aime. Tu m'as pas manqué. Bruxelles, je t'aime, Bruxelles, je t'aime. Tu m'as pas fait rêver. Bruxelles, je t'aime, Bruxelles, je t'aime. Choisir un camp, ce serait le pire des cauchemars. Tout ça pour une histoire de langue. J'ai vécu mes plus belles histoires en français et en flamand. La mer sait mille femmes, n'a que Bruxelles vaut mon âme. Et si un jour elle se sépare et qu'on ait à choisir un camp, ce serait le pire des cauchemars. Tout ça pour une histoire de langue. J'ai vécu mes plus belles histoires en français et en flamand. La mer sait que mille femmes, rien que Bruxelles. Bruxelles, je t'aime, Bruxelles, je t'aime. Tu m'as pas manqué. Bruxelles, je t'aime, Bruxelles, je t'aime.
Wonderful, wonderful stuff. Really concise look at Belgium in this show, in this edition of Minainen Baranin, Malta through Global Eyes on Campus 103.7. I am speaking to Amy Coleman. Is that your original surname or your husband's surname?
Did I you? Never took my husband's surname.
So Coleman, it sounds like a British surname.
It's actually Irish. It goes back, someone actually investigated where it comes from, and yeah. And yes, so it dates back to Ireland, 16th century Ireland. Coal miners, actually, coalmen,
okay,
coal
of
miners.
Yes.
So yes, there is some Irish blood in me.
But your father is Belgian.
He's Belgian, but he has
the surname.
Yes, and he was an English lecturer and an Anglophile, and I rarely heard him speak Dutch. He always spoke English. So, and I owe my English knowledge to him, so I'm very grateful
my
for that.
My father's favorite mustard was made by Coleman.
Yes, in fact, this is a funny story. When we had our first child, so I have two boys, one is 8 and one is 10, I wanted a double-barreled surname. So my husband's surname is Fennec and mine is Coleman, so I wanted Fennec Coleman, and he said, no way, because they're going to be bullied because Fennec is rabbit and Coleman is mustard. So people are going to make fun of them, rabbit with mustard. And I said, no one thinks like that. He said, yes, they do. So yes,
children can be cruel. You'd be surprised.
It's a pity though, because I think my surname is going to die with me, but well.
What are the things you found hardest to get used to here?
I'm going to sound like a broken record, the construction. Almost. I had never seen a crane. This sounds ridiculous, but I had never seen a crane before moving to Malta. Because as I said, I lived in the city center, and at the time there was no construction. Now there is. Now we do have skyscrapers as well, but in designated areas. So when I came here, even back then, obviously construction has really picked up in recent times, or recent, let's say the last 10 years.
Yeah.
But even back then, I remember seeing all these cranes and thinking, I've never seen a crane in my life. So that was the one thing. And just the location, the fact that it's an island, so perhaps the island mentality. I was born in a country, a very, very liberal country.
Mm-hmm.
So I did have to adapt to that a little bit.
You mean the conservatism?
Very, very conservative.
Inherent?
Yes, very conservative. I mean, again, my mom is Italian, so she is quite conservative. But Belgium is a very liberal country. So when I came here, there were certain things that I had to get used to. and
like to bite your tongue instead
to
of
bite my tongue
things.
And politics. I mean, before coming here this morning, my husband said to me, "Don't talk politics, Amy," because in Belgium, politics are not as important as they are here. We don't talk politics at the kitchen table. Now I'm an adopted Maltese. I talk politics,
and you have opinions on. Certain,
I
on,
have
on our
opinions,
on,
yes.
on our politics, and I include you in the hour.
Yes,
because
yes.
you are one of us.
I'm not going to go into that.
No.
But
of course
yes,
not,
yes,
but
I do have opinions, mm-hmm. And that's something I had to get used to. That everything is politicized in Malta,
which is not a good thing. Or is it?
it's not a bad thing, but it takes getting used to, because sometimes you have families where, you know, one side of the family sides with one party and the other side with the other party, and you can't discuss certain things at table because the discussions get really heated.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I really often have to bite my tongue. Mm-hmm. So that's something I had to really get used to, because I come from a country where we just blurt things out.
Okay, and people don't get heated?
I mean,
you mentioned that there are certain tensions in Belgium.
Linguistic. Mm-hmm. But again, we tend to... We're not as outspoken.
Would that be the Mediterranean attitude of being quite passionate?
I think so, yes. And as I said, I mean, I'm half Italian, so I am quite passionate as well, so I get into it as well.
Yeah.
But yes, that's probably very different. In Belgium, we tend to perhaps... keep our opinions to ourselves a little bit more when it comes to politics, whereas here everything has to be politicized. So,
you mean you have to take a side?
You don't have to choose sides, but I find it very puzzling that people know which side you're on as well, instantly, depending on where you live
or who you associate with, or who you're married to. Yeah.
Exactly.
Or at least they make their minds up.
Yes, exactly.
They wouldn't know what you've done in the polling booth.
That's it.
But no, that's true. They tend to categorize.
In Belgium, you wouldn't know. You really wouldn't know. Mm-hmm. It's not something that is discussed. But it has its charm. It has its charm. So, and I find it fascinating.
And the things you love about Malta, for example, any type of Maltese food that you've fallen in love with?
I'm not a big fan of Maltese cuisine, sorry.
No worries.
I love Kinney, that's the drink I love, but yeah, I'm not a big fan of, I find it very heavy. I don't mind having pastizzi every now and then, but as I said, I don't like rabbit very much, and I find Maltese food very, very heavy.
So
coming from, you know... the Italian culture, since my mom's Italian, I really grew up with Italian food. I find, yes, Maltese food very, very heavy. A lot of pastry.
And the portions bigger.
And the portions are very, very big.
Yeah.
It's cheaper than Belgium as well. I mean, I was there recently and a packet of pasta was $3.99. I remember sending a picture to my friends here. I said, can you believe it? $3.99 for a packet of Barilla, which isn't even the best pasta.
Yeah.
So, yes. But apart from the food, I think I just love the Mediterranean lifestyle. I love the fact that there's always something going on, festas and festivals and events, and people live outside, and I really love that. I love the fact that we eat outdoors a lot. We work very hard in Malta. Sometimes I think we work harder here than in Belgium. So this cliche of, you know, the Mediterranean people not working hard is not true at all. I mean, we're very, very hard workers here in Malta, but we also live life. Mm-hmm. So once we close the office door, we go out and we really live and we really enjoy life.
And the fact that it's small and that you can get to the beach or to the restaurant or to... the countryside quickly, that's kind of sometimes in our favor, isn't it?
It is sometimes in our favor, but I do, every few months I do need to leave, even if just for a few days, to appreciate it more, because it is very small. And again, that can be to your advantage, of course, because you can get anywhere. Although yesterday it took me over an hour to come back from Armir to Slima because of traffic.
Yeah.
And I think traffic is one of those things that you hear a lot as a frustration for foreigners. You know, traffic is a bit of an issue. But yes, when I leave, I appreciate it more. Even just landing in Malta and seeing the sea, you do appreciate it more when you've been gone for a
But you
a
need
few
to
days.
Leave
I need to
leave recharge your batteries for
yes.
a bit.
I live one Ryanair ticket to the next.
And your parents?
They love it. My dad is unwell, so my dad he has dementia, so at the moment he's not speaking anymore, unfortunately, which is very, very painful. But he used to tell me, you can always come back. I love Malta, but you can always come back. So he bought me a car and he said, you can always sell the car and come back. because they really miss me. But my mom understands why I'm here. My mom did the same. I mean, she moved to Belgium for love, so she understands the reasoning. And they know that my character is a very Mediterranean, bubbly character, so that this is where I'm supposed to be.
Do you think your kids will stay here, or would you encourage them to maybe study abroad and do the same kind of thing that you did?
I will,
as in, would you be upset if they did?
No, I will definitely encourage them to study abroad, definitely, because it's a life experience. It's up to them, really. I mean, they have Maltese, Belgian and Italian citizenship, so they can choose where they want to live. I mean, now in the EU, you can live anywhere, basically. But I gave them the three citizenships, so they have the three of them. I hope they travel. I hope they explore the world. But I know they love Malta a lot, especially Slima. They are absolutely in love with Slima. They love it. They love the fact that we're near the beach and we're near the point and we have restaurants and shops, and they absolutely love it. So they are Maltese, even though their Maltese is not great. They go to an English-speaking school, and I have to admit their Maltese is not great. So it's something we're working on.
How old are they?
8 and 10.
Okay, so they're not at the age yet where they're thinking about careers and moving abroad.
Well, they want to be gamers like all kids their age, right? They want to be gamers.
And Slima's full of them as well.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, Amy Coleman, it's been fantastic talking to you. I've learned so much about Belgium and your life here. It's been such a great pleasure. I hope you've enjoyed it too.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I was very excited to come here. I'm very, very happy that I got to share part of my heritage with you. And again, if anyone is inspired by Dutch, I teach Dutch in semester 2 of the upcoming academic year, Dutch for Beginners 1. So if you want to learn more about Belgium, about the differences between Belgium and the Netherlands, and about Belgian culture, join me. Registrations are open. So I hope to be able to share a piece of this heritage with the students here at UM as well.
Our listeners, what website should they go to find out more about what you're talking about?
So if you Google Degree Plus, you will find the website of the Degree Plus program. It's open to University of Malta students. I teach Dutch on, if I'm not mistaken, Fridays in semester 2. So it's from noon till 2 o'clock, and they're fun lessons, no exams, no stress. Yeah. So it's just, it's basically like having a chat with me.
Amy Coleman, thank you so much for being with me here on Campus 103.7.
Thank you, Colin. Thank you.